This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yeheye Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
And as they always say, the fate of nations is dependent on the state of their women. If you look at the top 10 countries that are up there in the development index, these are the same top 10 countries that are up there in the gender equality index.
That was Amina Farah, the IGAD gender program manager, who says it is time women are brought into all negotiations aimed at ending the Sudan conflict. Details coming up. Also, Zimbabwe's central bank governor is hoping for meaningful discussions at the World Bank IMF meetings. And the UN envoy to Western Sahara is trying to revive an idea floated more than two decades ago to end the ongoing unrest there. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen today made a thinly veiled criticism of former President Donald Trump by telling world financial leaders the U.S. economy has grown stronger because the Biden administration rejected social isolationism, and she was speaking at the International Monetary Fund and World Bank annual meetings. Trump, who is trying to return to the White House in next month's presidential election, says he made major economic progress during a four-year term and that Biden had presided over an economic regression. But Yellen told the financial meeting in Washington that the opposite was true. Reuters quoted her as saying, "We went from millions having lost their jobs to a historic labor market recovery, and that the U.S. economic growth has been almost twice as fast as most other advanced economies this year and last, even as inflation came down sooner." The IMF released its international outlook on the global economy this morning and upgraded its economic outlook for the United States this year, while lowering its expectations for growth in Europe and China. Zimbabwe's central bank governor, John Mushaivanu, is among high-ranking bankers attending the annual meeting of the World Bank and International Monetary Fund this week in Washington, D.C. Mushaivanu is optimistic that he will have meaningful discussions with the two multilateral funding institutions and other stakeholders amid serious economic problems at home. The new Zimbabwe gold currency, the ZiG, is fast depreciating against the U.S. dollar. He says the ZiG may perform much better in the near future when many Zimbabweans start using it. Zimbabwe owes the IMF, the World Bank, and other banks almost $13 billion. Mushaivanu speaks about this and other issues to VOA Zimbabwe service Marvelous Malanga Nahui.
We are here for the IMF World Bank annual meetings, where all ministers of finance, spending sectors of finance, governors of central bank, congregate to deliberate on issues to do with fiscal and monetary matters.
Are you hoping to have your relationship with the IMF and International Monetary Fund revived? What are you hoping to get from these meetings?
Well, we are always talking to the World Bank, the IMF, and this is a continuation of those conversations that we have always been having.
And also, we see you're at the MEFMI meeting. Tell us a little bit about how important this meeting is for you.
Well, first of all, let me say that Zimbabwe is the host to MEFMI. And obviously, MEFMI is celebrating 30 years since it was formed. And we have been working with MEFMI for those past 30 years. And we are happy to continue working with them into the future. We are grateful to MEFMI for all the training activities that they do for us. And so we wish them many, many more years.
And also the big question of the ZiG, which you introduced as the new governor. How is it faring in Zimbabwe? A lot of people are saying it has been losing value, although you say that it's backed by gold. What's the current situation?
Yes, certainly zinc is backed by gold. As the central bank, we are accumulating gold that we collect from royalties, and also we have been accumulating those reserves over the past few years. At the time when we launched zinc, we had $285 million worth of reserves. Now those reserves have since grown to $450 million, but deposits have not significantly increased. So what that means is that we have more gold backing the currency that is in circulation. So any exchange rate depreciation that may have occurred is temporary, because what we see is a situation where if we as the central bank wanted to buy back all the zinc in circulation, we could do that without necessarily the exchange rate having to move. In fact, the exchange rate would have to strengthen if we were to buy back all the deposits that are in the market with the reserves that we've got.
So what's your word to all your critics out there who have been criticizing the zinc and the falling of the value?
Well, my word to them is that as the central bank, we continue to walk the talk. We made our promises, and we can assure you that as people get more and more used to zinc, the rate will strengthen and the currency will be more and more acceptable. We will continue to accumulate the reserves that we are using to back zinc. And so it is our belief and it is our understanding that going forward, we are going to see a stabilization of the zinc.
That was Zimbabwe Central Bank Governor John Mushaivanu speaking with VOA Zimbabwe Service, Marvelous Malanga Nehuye in Washington, D.C. A leading opposition candidate in Mozambique's contested general election on Tuesday accused security forces of killing his lawyer. The French news agency AFP quotes Venancio Mondlane, a candidate for president, as saying Elvino Divas was preparing to submit a case Saturday to the Constitutional Court contesting early election results showing the ruling Frelimo party ahead in the polls. Witnesses says Diaz was in a car in central Maputo with Paul Gwambi from the Podemos party, which backs Mondlane, when they were surrounded by vehicles and shot dead. In a video posted on Facebook, Mondlane accused the security forces of firing at Divas 25 times. Frelimo has been in power since the country gained independence from Portugal 49 years ago. Earlier today, election observers from the European Union said they noted irregularities during counting and unjustified alteration of election results at polling stations and at the district level as well. The United Nations envoy to Western Sahara, Staffan de Mistura, has proposed reviving an old proposal for partitioning the disputed Western Sahara as one way to satisfy both sides and let residents decide which government to live under. He said a southern section could be an independent state for the Polisario and the rest could be integrated as part of Morocco. Ahmed Fatih, a UN correspondent and global affairs analyst, discussed with VOA senior analyst Mohamed Al-Shenawi what prompted the UN envoy to revive an idea that former UN envoy James Baker floated more than two decades ago.
The reasons behind Mr. de Mistura's floating this idea again, for me, it's kind of a mystery. The international powers, the regional situation is that they are all moving in the direction of the Moroccan autonomy plan, which powers like the United States, the France, and Spain, the former colonizer of the Western Sahara. Still, the idea came out floating, which was rejected, and the world has passed this state. The most of the Western countries describing the autonomy plan as serious, credible, and realistic for resolving this long-standing conflict. So the reasons behind Mr. de Mistura's submission is really not known to me.
But Polisario Front said in a statement that it told Mr. de Mistura in an October 3rd meeting that any compromise that disregarded international law or was contrary to the mandate of the UN's mission for the referendum was a non-starter. And also Morocco has rejected the idea. What would that lead to?
It can lead to several scenarios, but none of them is conclusive solution for the conflict. The first scenario I can think of that the continuation of the stalemate and the prolonged conflict. This conflict has been going on for decades now. Neither the Polisario nor Morocco are compromising. Another scenario that it can lead to diplomatic fracture. Since there is a wave of countries, not just Western countries, but African countries, Asian, Pacific region, they have recognized the sovereignty of Morocco over the Sahara, and about 25 countries of them have already established a diplomatic presence, a consulate in this part of Moroccan territory. So this, I think, can lead to more countries joining in, and the prevalence of a realistic solution can emerge. Regional tensions also is a possible scenario between Morocco and Algeria, which Algeria supports the Polisario Front. So this can add to it. Maybe a scenario from the UN side that they would change or shift their mediation strategy from trying to find a conclusive solution into just peacekeeping in the region.
Answering a question on whether the United States still stands by supporting Moroccan sovereignty over Western Sahara like the previous administration did, State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller said there has been no change in our policy. What do you make of that?
The stance of the U.S. government reflects its strategic interests in maintaining a strong alliance with Morocco. And Morocco is a North African country, a key partner in counterterrorism, regional security, and economic cooperation in North Africa. However, supporting Morocco's autonomy plan, the U.S. is aligning itself with other major powers, France and Spain, and they see it as this proposal is a pragmatic way to resolve this long-standing conflict and not just to adhere. And based on my personal experience, as I visited the Sahara before, I saw a thriving population in Laayoune, which is the creative capital of the Sahara. I haven't heard or seen or learned that the people living in the Tindouf camp are having the same way of life and prosperity as their brethren living under the Moroccan. So I think pragmatism will prevail at some point.
That was Ahmed Fatih, a UN Global Affairs Analyst, speaking with VOA's Mohamed Elshenawy. You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. And we'd love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1 202 258 3076. And every Wednesdays, we'll be sharing our listeners' comments on African News Tonight. A fire devastated Ethiopia's largest open market, injuring at least 21 people and destroying goods worth millions of dollars. The blaze in the capital Addis Ababa broke out at a place popularly known as Shematera at around 3 p.m. today. Firefighting brigades struggled to control the blaze. According to witnesses, those injured suffered from smoke inhalation. Addis Ababa Mayor Adanich Ababa expressed deep regret over the property losses and highlighted ongoing efforts to control the blaze. The Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, is calling for women to be involved in peace and reconciliation efforts in war-torn Sudan. IGAD, like the United Nations, is emphasizing that Sudanese women's voices should be integrated in all peace negotiations. Catherine Numbi reports from Nairobi.
More than 70% of the 10 million people displaced by Sudan's war are women and children. The Member States of Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, say they are overstretched trying to help refugees from the conflict, which began in April 2023. Eman Dulman has been displaced by the war. She says displacement puts women at risk of sexual and gender-based violence, as well as increased maternal mortality since they cannot access reproductive health facilities.
The situation of Sudan now is very hard and very serious. For children under 5 years, malnourished, our mother suspected to delivery in the hard situation and unsafe situation. Now there is a high number of the rape in Sudan, children out of school.
The IGAD states are Djibouti, Ethiopia, Kenya, Somalia, South Sudan, Sudan and Uganda. They have been having a special meeting this week in Nairobi on the role of women in building peace in Sudan. Victoria Anib Majut is the head of IGAD's Social Development Unit. She notes that women and children bear the biggest burden of the worsening humanitarian crisis the war has created.
Food insecurity is a major challenge, acute malnutrition. The health infrastructure has been basically totally disrupted. 70% of health facilities are destroyed completely. Healthcare workers have fled to other countries. The rate of vaccination has dropped significantly, leading to outbreak of measles. There is no access to safe water. And given the recent flooding, it has even exacerbated the condition, leading to waterborne diseases. There is an ongoing cholera outbreak because of the issue of sanitation breakdown.
Amina Farah, the IGAD Gender Program Manager, says it's time women are brought into all negotiations aimed at ending the Sudan conflict.
Often the peace processes that are inclusive lead to lasting peace. And as they always say, the fate of nations is dependent on the state of their women. If you look at the top 10 countries that are up there in the development index, these are the same top 10 countries that are up there in the gender equality index. It tells you that when women are engaged in processes, then you have lasting solutions, you have a fast-track development.
Lawrence Kobandi is the IGAD Special Envoy to Sudan. He says research indicates that peace agreements reached with the participation of women are more likely to endure.
This inclusion is not just a moral obligation. It is a practical strategy for success. Therefore, we must advocate for women's rightful place at the negotiation table, not as passive participants, but as active leaders whose contributions are essential to healing Sudan.
The United Nations says the war in Sudan has led to the world's worst hunger and displacement crisis, with some areas in the Darfur region facing famine. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Nairobi.
The mystery surrounding a crashed cargo plane purportedly downed by Sudan's paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, RSF, has deepened as authorities say the aircraft has been deregistered in Kyrgyzstan. Just who was flying the Ilyushin 1176 at night over war-torn Darfur remains a mystery. The aircraft previously was linked to an effort by the United Arab Emirates, UAE, to arm the RSF, which the UAE has denied. The Associated Press reports that mobile phone footage posted online shows RSF fighters amid the plane's burning wreckage, claiming they shot it down with a surface-to-air missile. Identity documents shown include a Russian passport and an ID linked to a UAE-based company whose phone number was disconnected. The Russian embassy in Sudan has been investigating. The RSF says the aircraft belonged to the Sudanese military and has been operated by jihadist militia groups. Kenya's High Court today began hearing a legal bid by impeachment Deputy President Rigathi Gachagua to overturn his ouster. Both Gachagua and President William Ruto challenged, for different reasons, the court's ability to hear the case. The High Court in Nairobi on Friday had ordered that Gachagua's impeachment be put on hold. That ruling came just after Parliament had approved Interior Minister Kithure Kindiki to replace Gachagua as Ruto's Deputy President. The Senate impeached Gachagua on Thursday on 5 charges, including stirring ethnic divisions and undermining the judiciary. Gachagua has denied all the allegations, and his legal team swiftly launched an appeal alleging the process had been unfair and rushed. Today, his legal team challenged the makeup of the 3-judge bench, saying it had not been constituted by Kenya's Chief Justice, but by her deputy. On the other hand, Ruto's team argued the High Court did not have the jurisdiction to hear the case, saying it should be the preserve of the Supreme Court because it covers constitutional issues. American expatriates in Burkina Faso are preparing to exercise their civic duty by voting in the upcoming U.S. presidential election. Reporter Kader Traore spoke to 2 expatriates in the capital Ouagadougou and has this story narrated by Jackson and Funganye.
Good morning. Welcome.
Mina Anderson is the director of the International School of Ouagadougou, or ISO, the American school in the Burkinabe capital. Having lived outside the United States for a long time, Anderson says she closely follows election-related activities in her country and is looking forward to voting in this year's presidential election.
Many of us feel that this election is very important. So I know that this summer I made sure that my voting registration was up to date and intact. I made sure that my ballot will come to me electronically. For some Americans, this is very, very important election. Probably those who are very much on the conservative side or they're very much on the liberal side.
Even from afar, Anderson closely follows political debates and events in the U.S., recognizing how American politics influences the political landscape in Africa, where she lives.
The policies of our American government impact not only what happens in Africa, not only for local Africans, the investment that we put into countries, but also our status. So I was living in Sudan when Obama was elected, and I saw, for the first time, I saw so much openness and generosity coming from the African people. They were so excited for our country. So the, you know, who is in charge in our country, it definitely makes a difference to how people perceive me as an American overseas.
Elizabeth Zanz is another expatriate, originally from the U.S. state of California, and now works as an art teacher at the American School of Ouagadougou. Like Anderson, she values vibrant political discussions in her native country and understands the impact beyond its borders.
I think it's going to be a close election, but it's an important election. I think there's many... will be many challenges, yes. I think it's important, yeah, especially this election, to be engaged in politics because it affects the world, what happens in America.
Zanz emphasized the importance of voting for expatriates like her and shared issues that are important for the future. Anderson says out of a whole range of issues that are important in this campaign, a few stand out.
The right to reproductive care is important. I would like people to have the same rights that I had when I was a young girl. I think the way that we look at and treat other people in the world is very important. I think that the issue of how our country has become more diverse and whether we're inclusive to all that diversity, all religions, all races, just like our Constitution says we're supposed to be, that's very important. And if you have to put an umbrella over all of it, it's really protection of ourselves as a democracy and having somebody in charge who's going to make sure that our country continues to be a strong, fair, equal partner with the rest of the world, somebody who shines the light of democracy.
In the meantime, local pubs and cafes in the capital Ouagadougou, popular with American expatriates, are buzzing with lively discussions and debates about the issues that matter to them as the U.S. presidential election nears. For Kada Trawole in Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso, I'm Jackson Vunganyi, VOA Africa.
And on behalf of our producer, David Vandy, and our engineer, Adrius Rigas, thanks for listening to Africa News Tonight.